Welcome to Rabble Radio. It's Friday, March 15th, 2024. I'm your host, Brianne Doyle. Thanks so much for tuning in. Rabble's got its finger on the beat of the issues that matter to you. If you're curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labor, environment, or social justice, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us, free of corporate influence. This week on Rabble Radio, Rabble editor Nick Seabrook sits down with 2S LGBTQIA advocate Faye Johnstone to talk about the recent attempted political moves across provinces to take away trans rights and how organizations like Momentum are fighting back. Faye Johnstone is the executive director of Wisdom to Action, a progressive consulting firm and social enterprise, as well as the part-time executive director of the Society of Queer Momentum, a 2S LGBTQIA+ advocacy nonprofit. She is a prominent advocate for queer and trans rights and a recurring voice in Canadian news on 2S LGBTQIA+ issues. Here are Faye Johnstone and Nick Seabrook in conversation. Take a listen.
Faye Johnstone, thank you so much for joining me today for this episode of Rabble Radio. How are you?
I'm doing wonderfully, and thank you so much for having me on today.
All right, so first, let's do some introductions. Our show goes out across the country, so how about you introduce yourself for maybe people who are listening who might not know you and your work?
Absolutely. So my name is Faye Johnstone. I use she and they pronouns. I'm a 28-year-old trans woman living on unceded, unsurrendered Algonquin Anishinaabe territory, formerly known as Ottawa. And on one end, I'm the executive director of the Society of Queer Momentum, which is an organization founded last year to help accelerate social and gender justice for queer and trans communities, most notably by challenging the contemporary rise in anti-trans and anti-queer hate and mobilizing communities across this country to pressure governments, hold politicians accountable, and imagine a free, equal, and socially just future for all of our communities.
Fantastic. Very important work, especially as you mentioned, in the face of the what we're seeing today in the rise of anti-trans hate, especially. And I'd like to dive right in on that topic and ask you about, you know, this past year, last year and into this year, we saw the introduction of anti-trans policies at the provincial level in New Brunswick, in Saskatchewan, and this year in Alberta. I wanted to first get your reaction to that, and why are we seeing this rise in institutionalized discrimination?
That is a great question. It's one many of us are asking. You know, why are we seeing this like new age or new era resurgence of both like anti-trans policies, but more broadly of homophobia and transphobia? And I think that's an important piece of context to keep in mind here, right? So, you know, in the last 20 years, we've made immense progress on the equality, the support and inclusion of queer and trans people in Canada. But, you know, homophobia never fully went away. And a lot of what we're seeing right now is a resurgence of that latent discriminatory attitude or behavior that was always there in the Canadian population, but that for a little while, you know, we thought was something you shouldn't talk about, something that you shouldn't share and shouldn't be proud of. And so what I would say is happening right now is in an era where we're seeing a lot of crises, you know, where folks are struggling to pay their bills, where folks are really frustrated at governments and politicians that aren't able to deliver for our families. I think some of these politicians and some of these far-right groups that we're seeing are trying to use queer and trans people as a bit of a political scapegoat. So they're stomping down on us to fuel anger, to fuel fear, and to fuel animosity towards diversity, equity, and human rights writ large. And they're using a lot of repackaged slogans and rhetoric from the 70s, you know, that was about, you know, being scared of gay people and gay teachers and all of these ideas about, you know, protecting women and children from gay folks. But now they're using trans people as their target, really to further a much broader social conservative agenda that is about governments controlling your body, controlling how you can live your life, and pitting communities that should be in solidarity with one another against each other so that we're distracted and they can gain power.
Yes, and as you point out, you know, all of these provinces that I mentioned, they're run by conservative premiers who claim to be about small government, but unless it comes to controlling a person's body. And just getting a little bit more specific into what these policies entail, there's a lot of common themes in these policies around not using the correct pronouns for transgender youth in schools. There's blocking of access to gender-affirming care. And I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about the effects that these policies have on transgender youth.
Absolutely. So all of this started in New Brunswick, where a premier was having a hard time managing his own caucus and his own cabinet, and he needed the distraction. And so he saw what was happening in Southern American states, and he decided to copy-paste that playbook here. And a lot of this, to understand, is it is cynical politics, right? So in New Brunswick, and it was, you know, caucus problems and like a failure of leadership. In Saskatchewan, it was a premier who was trying to outflank an even further right party that was trying to, you know, steal away some of their votes. And then in Alberta, you've got a very powerful, you know, Take Back Alberta social conservative movement that has actually already succeeded in ousting one premier. And you've got a premier who needs to keep them happy in order to stay as premier. And so the policies themselves are, in New Brunswick and Saskatchewan, very focused on forcing trans kids back into the closet and denying young folks access to comprehensive sexuality education. So if you were under the age of 16 in those provinces and you want to come out as trans at school, you actually need parental permission now to do so. Now, we all want parents to be involved. Parental involvement is the gold standard. It leads to better outcomes for these young folks in every single context. But the problem is, these kids deserve the freedom to be themselves at school. And they deserve the space to figure out who they are, to figure out by coming out with their classmates and their teachers before they are ready to do so at home. And that actually allows them to have the confidence to be themselves and to have those hard conversations with their families. And so the impact in those provinces is social rhetoric that demonizes gender diversity and demonizes folks who look a little bit different or who use a different name or pronouns than most folks might expect. The other impact is policies that constrict freedom and setting a precedent of governments determining who you can be and how and when you're ready to be that person. And that's a really dangerous thing to normalize. Now, in the Alberta context, we actually have the most draconian policies that we've ever seen introduced on trans issues in Canada. They go beyond the school stuff, and they actually interfere in medically necessary and evidence-based healthcare. They, in essence, ban gender-affirming care for trans and gender-diverse minors. And there's an important piece here. You know, gender-affirming care is not understood by many folks. Most people don't know what we're talking about. And I can go on and on about the science supporting puberty blockers and why a trans person who's dealing with like severe daily debilitating conditions deserves access to healthcare, just like every other kid or every other young person who's got some health stuff going on. But aside from the like science debate that is one we need to have because we're always improving this healthcare and always figuring out how to do it better, it's the scary precedent when a government ignores doctors, when a government ignores the scientific consensus, and for ideological purposes, places itself quite firmly between young folks and their families and the healthcare that those kids need. Now, maybe I am too cynical and jaded as a trans person in Canada right now, but I actually don't think this is about us. What I see through this government's imposition in healthcare is a Trojan horse attack on reproductive rights. Mm. Because if you're able to set a precedent where a government goes in while ignoring evidence, while ignoring science, while ignoring physicians, families, and young people, it makes it easier to do it the next time. And many of these groups that are gunning for trans folks as healthcare, they're actually pro-life organizations like the Campaign Life Coalition and many others. And they've lost, thank goodness, they've lost the pro-life debate. But they're hoping to bring that back into the mainstream by punching down on trans kids, by spreading misinformation and actually turning the public against the regulated, science-based healthcare system we deserve so that they can do it for abortion care next.
Right. Very interesting that you connect those that whole spectrum of conservatism, the movement together. We have a columnist here at Rabble, Charlotte Dalwood. She's based in Alberta. She's a transgender columnist. And she said that the effect of the Alberta policies in particular was to eradicate trans people from public life. Do you agree with that that assessment?
I think that that's a long-term objective. And I think, you know, when we look to Alberta, this is actually going to force some families out of the province. If you're a parent with a young child and they need access to healthcare, they're not going to be able to get access to that care in Alberta anymore. And beyond the policies, it's like the social environment where we normalize hate and where we cater to the most fringe radical folks who hate people like me and want to force us out of public life. And so it's one part. But I think the broader political picture is where we really see a threat to democracy and a threat to trans people's dignity, because we're seeing these governments take their cue from folks who are, you know, sending death threats to pride organizers, to trans people, who are mobilizing and demonizing trans and gender diverse people in a very concentrated effort to throw us off the public stage and create a norm where they're talking about us without us there, and they can stomp us out when we do pop our heads up.
For these provincial policies, what was Momentum's reaction? How have you been pushing back against policies like the ones in New Brunswick, Alberta, Saskatchewan?
We've been working behind the scenes with organizations, with parents and young folks and academics on the ground to help respond, to help mobilize, to help folks see the true story of trans people. You know, most trans folks are just trying to live our lives, pay our bills, access our healthcare, and contribute to our economy, our culture, and our community. And these kids in particular, they've been lost in this conversation. Like, trans kids just want to hang out. They want to, I don't know, like watch movies, go to the mall, do whatever it is that young folks do today. And so we've been helping say, like, tell that story, while also helping everyday folks who, you know, maybe are worried about this issue, have a means of taking action. So, for example, we've had a letter writing campaign out in New Brunswick. We did another one in Saskatchewan, and we've got our biggest one yet out in Alberta right now. And folks who are listening to this can actually tap in by going to www.momentumcanada.net, click on that action center in the middle of the screen, and you'll see a whole bunch of opportunities to raise up your voice and support queer and trans advocacy for a more free, equal, and socially just future.
One province that we haven't talked about yet that does have a well-known conservative premier is the one that we're in, Ontario. Doug Ford and his education minister, Stephen Lecce, over the past few months have kind of been doing a little bit of signaling that they might be following in the footsteps of these other provinces. Does this concern you? And are you already working to try and counter that if it does happen in Ontario?
So I'm very hopeful that Ford doesn't engage in this space. I think when he made his comments at a rally, we saw the Ontario Principals Council and health and social service organizations and advocates all across the country speak out. And I think our message was loud and clear. Don't mess with trans people and their rights, or you will pay a political price. And I hope that he's aware of that. I was very reassured when Danielle Smith came to Ontario and met with the premier. He actually affirmed that the Ontario government was not considering or not going to go forward with similar policies to what we've seen in Saskatchewan, New Brunswick, and Alberta. But, you know, this government tends to find fun distractions whenever they have a new scandal. And so that is my worry. However, my message to the premier and actually to conservatives across the country is that they are at a critical juncture. They can choose if they want to bring their parties into the 21st century and leave this hate and mudslinging to the past, but they actually need some options, some visible alternatives. I think about the Progressive Conservative government in PEI, where they actually have loudly and proudly said, nope, we're not engaging in this anti-trans messery. I think about the PC government, even in Nova Scotia, where they're working on an action plan to advance equality for LGBTQ plus people. And so my message to Premier Ford might be that conservative movements lead leadership right now that is not the fringe populist far-right stuff that we've seen in America. And he actually has an opportunity to be a beacon for a more modern conservatism that isn't here to punch down on minorities. And I hope that he steps up to the opportunity as a leader in the conservative space that this moment presents to him.
Now, we've talked about this issue at the provincial level, And, you know, you just mentioned about, you know, how to be leaders in conservative space. But, you know, the national conservative leader, Pierre Poilievre, is going down this route of populism, of discrimination, of, you know, just stoking bias against anti-trans people. Just as recently as last month, he made an anti-trans statement, among which he said he would he opposed the use of puberty blockers in people under the age of 18, which is a statement just on the surface of it that's absolutely absurd. You know, banning puberty blockers after you're out of puberty just does not make any sense. So I was just wondering, what is your reaction to that? Because Pierre Poilievre, you know, he is leading in the polls. He does seem to find, you know, going down this route acceptable and effective with his base. So how do you respond to what you've seen Pierre Poilievre say on the national stage?
I was hoping that he wouldn't bite. I was really hoping, you know, he is leading in the polls. His economic message alone is, you know, unfortunately resonating with folks across the country. I was really hoping that he would opt for avoiding this issue. And I think it actually says a lot about the conservative movement today that he leaned in. And that also that he leaned in with the most like asinine, ill-informed comment imaginable. But I would compare it to the Danielle Smith situation. I don't think Danielle Smith hates trans people. Like I actually don't. I think she's probably got some stigma and some messiness going on. But I don't think she's a raging bigot on this issue. What I think, however, is similar to Alberta, Poilievre has a really well-organized social conservative faction within his party. And he's seeing a lot of these COVID conspiracy theorists, these far-right groups, pushing and pressuring him to take cues from their movement. Fortunately, in 2024, you can't lean into like the explicitly like pro-life or anti-gay stuff. And you can't, hopefully, lean in too far on the, like, conspiracy theory things. And so he's using trans people and punching down on us to shore up that support in far-right groups. My message to him would be similar to other premier or provincial premiers across the country, is that we don't need this in Canada. And I actually think it will hurt him in the long run, as we get near an election, if he engages with this further. Canadians do not want a prime minister who is punching down on minorities, who is opposing human rights that, while not everyone understands, are important to our understanding of ourselves as Canadians and as good people. And so I think this is going to be a challenge for his image and for his reputation if he keeps throwing these bones to far-right groups that are literally sending death threats to trans people and trying to protest our events, our drag shows, and force kids back into the closet. That's not good for a prime minister in waiting. It's really dangerous for him, both because it normalizes that hate, it will galvanize that hate, but he's also gonna owe these social conservatives if he goes into this further, and that's not in the best interest of most Canadians. If you rank people's priorities for this election, the trans stuff is nowhere on that list. Economic issues, housing, climate justice, these are priorities for Canadians, not anti-trans messery.
Now, you had a wonderful piece in Extra Magazine last week that talked about conservatives not pushing back against Poilievre and what he said about trans people. And, you know, you've singled out in particular Melissa Lantzman and Eric Duncan, the only two openly gay MPs in the Conservative caucus. Eric, in fact, was the first openly gay MP that the Conservatives ever had. And neither Eric was completely silent on this issue. And Melissa Lantzman went even further and affirmed that this was the official policy of the Conservative Party. Can you tell us a little bit about your reaction to the failure of these politicians to push back against their leader?
Absolutely. So, you know, part of it was Melissa Lantzman was mean to me on Twitter and insinuated that I was some sort of like partisan hack because my consulting firm has received government dollars. Let's be real. The National Post has received government dollars. Consulting firms, nonprofits across this country have received government dollars. And it's dollars to do good and important work. It's also dollars that come with millions of strings attached to them. And so after Poilievre made his icky comments, I wrote a thread and tagged in Lantzman and Duncan being like, hey, anything to say on this issue? And Lantzman decided to turn it into another one of her many cheap partisan attacks on the prime minister. Now, my hope is and has been that the red Tories, the many, and there's a good chunk of them, you know, Michelle Rempel is one that comes to mind, and Scott Atchison has also, you know, been a supporter of our rights and freedoms in the past. My hope is that my extra article will galvanize them to say something, because, you know, I've been assured for years, as somebody who lives in the Ottawa political bubble, that the Conservative Party is changing, that they are becoming more modern. And Lanzmann herself wrote an op-ed a few years ago urging the Conservatives to throw their homophobia and transphobia aside and leave it in the rearview mirror. And I think these folks need to be speaking out more now than ever. And I know that they'll pay a political price to do so in public, because that's not good for Pierre. And so even if they're not doing that, like, and I hope they will, but even if they're not, I hope that they're having these conversations behind closed doors. I can tell you a lot of conservative strategists are asking themselves, why are you doing this? Why are you leaning in further? But to those red Tories, to Lanzmann and Duncan as well, my message would be, this isn't actually just about trans people. If they come for us, we are a means to an end. We're a convenient target. But the ideology under these hate groups is one that hates gay people, that hates trans people, that hates the diversity of queer of this country and the better future we're building together. And so you're playing with fire. You are flirting with groups that want to restrict your own human rights. And you can see that by looking at how these groups talk about Melissa Lanzmann. They've said horrible things about her. And so this is not just about trans people. We're just a Trojan horse to attack reproductive rights, to roll back equality for queer and trans Canadians, and re-entrench a social environment that is akin to the 60s and 70s, when gay people were being fired from the public service, when our rights were non-existent, and where cops were beating us up.
And seeing this behavior from elected officials, you know, it can make you feel pretty cynical about the state of national politics. And, you know, if Pierre Poilievre does become prime minister and tries to introduce anti-trans policies on a national level, how is Momentum prepared for that? What would the response be?
We're going to fight tooth and nail, and we're not going to let him do it. We will pull out all the plugs. We will have parents across this country sharing outrage. We will have queer and trans people on the ground knocking on doors and holding every single Conservative member of parliament that is flirting with this hate accountable for normalizing bigotry. I sincerely hope that under a Poilievre government, they course correct and they don't mess with our rights. But we will fight them tooth and nail if they do, and have no doubt, we will be speaking up with Canadians of all races, classes, and genders to fight for that more free, equal world. And we're not going to roll backwards. We are defiant in the face of governments that stomp on the rights of our communities.
If there are people who are listening who want to get involved on the right side of this issue, who want to help, what can they do?
You know, reach out to your members of parliament, especially if you're in a conservative riding, and tell your story. You know, this is part of what worries me, is that this conversation is happening in a political and like social media environment, and the humanity of our communities is being lost. And so you don't need to be an expert on every detailed nuance of gender affirming care science or of the policies and what's going on around gender and sexual diversity, but connect with your MP, send them a letter, support your local queer and trans organizations that are fighting this fight on the front line. And I mean, you know, go to www.momentumcanada.net/join, join our newsletter, because as this mess gets worse, we are the organization that is going to mobilize Canadians, hold governments accountable, and not just stop the rise in hate, but keep fighting again for a country where we are all free, a country where we are equal, and where we continue this incredible journey towards a more inclusive vision of Canada for all of our families.
At the end of this month, on March 31st, is the International Day of Trans Visibility. I just wanted to ask how you and how will Momentum be recognizing that day?
We'll be lifting up the stories and voices of trans and gender diverse people all across this country. The trans factory workers, the trans kids doing cool art things in their communities. Because again, the humanity of trans people is what's going to help get us through this moment. So we're going to celebrate, because we have come so far. My community has so much to offer this world, and we should take joy in the progress that we've made.
Wonderful. Faye Johnstone, thank you so much for joining me today on Rabble Radio.
Thanks so much, Nick. It's been a pleasure.
That was was Faye Johnstone and Nick Seabrook in conversation. Thanks so much for that, Nick and Faye. To learn more about Momentum and the work they do, please visit www.momentumcanada.net. Now it's time for a segment we like to call In Case You Missed It. And for that, let's turn it back over to Nick Seabrook. Take it away, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. This week in labor news, the Canadian Union of Public Employees, CUPE, has filed for a judicial review with the Superior Court of Justice in Ontario against the Township of Black River Matheson. CUPE is asking the court to investigate the municipality's heavy-handed escalation in its treatment of striking municipal workers. On February 14th, SCAB workers allegedly struck picketing municipal employees with their vehicles as they attempted to cross the picket line. The township then issued trespass notices to the 14 striking employees, as well as other CUPE members. The 14 striking employees were initially locked out by the township on October of 2023 due to a labor dispute. The union then voted to engage in strike action in January of this year. At issue is competitive salaries for new employees. In environmental news, David Suzuki is calling out the reckless climate policies of the Alberta government. The government of Alberta, under Conservative Premier Daniel Smith, has increased the province's dependency on fossil fuels while restricting renewable energy projects. Smith has also imposed a $200 tax on electric vehicle owners. This year, the wildfire season in Alberta started in February. Suzuki said of the Alberta government, quote, "Politicians and governments must prioritize scientific evidence over corporate greed and short-term election outcomes. They should work for us, not self-serving corporations and their owners and executives." End quote. And finally, the Calgary police are being accused of charge stacking against two black female activists. Taylor McNally and Adora Nwofor are active human rights advocates, but are on the receiving end of a string of charges which they say are meant to discourage them from their work advocating against police violence and racial injustice. McNally has had 16 charges brought against her since 2020, and Nwofor has had 3 charges laid against her since 2023. Stop the Stack YYC is a nonprofit group that is working to help defend McNally and Nwofor against their charges. To read the full version of these stories that we talked about today, please visit rabble.ca.
Thanks, Nick. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks as always for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to Rabble Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. If you have feedback for the show, ideas, stories, opinions you'd like us to cover, we'd love to hear about it. Get in touch with us anytime at editor@rabble.ca. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week. listening.